On today's Idaho Matters, a mass stabbing in Boise against the most innocent of victims.
Idaho Matters is made possible by Idaho National Laboratory, St. Luke's, Beverly Robertson, and Boise State University.
A man targets a three-year-old birthday party, stabbing six children. The victims, refugees from Syria, Iraq, and Ethiopia, people who fled violence for a life of peace in America. Today, we talk about the attack, the impact on both Idaho's refugee population and for the city of Boise as we deal with an attack of this magnitude. And we want to hear from you this hour. How are you feeling? What questions do you still have about what happened? Reach out to us at idahomatters@boisestatepublicradio.edu or tweet us, KBSX 91.5, or find us on Facebook at Boise State Public Radio. I'm Gemma Gaudet. This is Idaho Matters. Coming up next, but first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh.
More at idrange.org.
You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. The city of Boise continues to reel today from a brutal attack at a Boise apartment complex Saturday night when a man targeted a three-year-old birthday party and stabbed nine people, six of whom were children ranging in age from 3 to 12 years old. Police tell us the suspect is 30-year-old Timothy Kinner from Los Angeles. Kinner has been charged with numerous felonies. He is set to be arraigned today. This incident has left our community shocked, heartsick, even angry, as we grapple with how someone could do this, not just in this city, but to the most innocent of victims, children. Joining me today to talk about this is Boise Chief of Police Bill Bones, Mike Journey, spokesperson for the city of Boise, and James Dawson, our reporter who has been covering this attack from the very beginning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thanks for having us.
I really appreciate you coming in on such short notice. I know how busy you have been the last couple of days. And Chief Bones, I'd like to start with you. Can you take me back to Saturday evening when this call came in?
Well, it's just one of those moments when I think a city stops, the whole heartbeat of the city pauses when a call like this comes out. And it really is, it's turning every officer, every first responder's attention to a single location. And that's where the focus of the city became and remained for the next 24 hours, really. And as you can see, it's still a central point to who we are as a community today. And it's going to be that way for a while.
And when your police officers got on scene, in a news conference on Sunday, you said it is something that will stay with you.
Yes. So, and obviously I'm not the first responder.
Right.
I'm not the first person walking in there, but walking through the aftermath of the scene and seeing the children's faces and the victims' faces at the hospital, those are things that are just indelibly carved on your heart. So for the first responders that walked in there and for everybody that's a part of that, and really for our very community, it is something that has become part of our psyche at this point in time and something that I would think will continue. But that also, it offers us an opportunity to learn and to move forward and to reaffirm who we are, mm-hmm. to, you know, reinstitute and show locally and across the country who Idahoans are.
And James, you were on scene fairly soon after that. Can you tell me a little bit about when you found out about what was going on?
Well, I found out about it shortly after the call came out around, I believe, 8:45 or so Saturday night. I was at home, and so I was covering it from there on Saturday night, but I live fairly close to State Street, so I did hear sirens wailing as police were responding to the scene. I was able to go out Sunday morning and kind of see the aftermath. I saw how several people bringing bouquets of flowers to lay just outside the police line. I saw people just kind of sitting in a nearby parking lot, just kind of assessing what had happened. People were in shock. Emotions were just blank. It is how I would describe it. And that's kind of what I heard from children that I talked to at the scene. I think we have some tape of that,
right.
Actually.
I wanted to talk to you about that because you actually, I mean, a lot of times when reporters go out, they talk with witnesses and all of that. In this instance, it really was much deeper because a lot of those witnesses were children. So tell me about that.
Yeah, so his demeanor, his name is Isram Hapta, 12 years old. He said that he had witnessed this man cursing and attacking people And he was just so present when he was talking to us that it was just kind of remarkable. I'm not exactly sure. I don't think I certainly could have been that composed at 12 years old if I had seen what he had seen. But what he told us was he saw this man stabbing people, and he immediately got him and his friends who were outside into the closet. They called police, stayed with the dispatcher, and waited until they had gotten an all-clear signal to leave the closet.
And let's actually play, if we have that really quickly, the sound from this young man.
When we were outside, he was chasing people and stabbing them. So we went inside the closet.
And we do want people to know that his mother was right there with him, gave permission for him to talk to media.
To the ABC. We got it from the ABC affiliate here.
Right. We just want to let people know that his mom was right there. Mike, you are a spokesperson with the city of Boise. Mayor Beter had a previous commitment, couldn't join us today, but will be with us tomorrow. But this is not representative of this city.
No, absolutely not. I think that was... You know, one of the first things that comes to mind when you hear about something like this is how could it happen here again? And one of the first things that Mayor Beter said was this isn't who we are. This is something that is very different and an aberration. And as it turns out, from what we know about the suspect, he is not from Boise. And you know, Boise has a long history of being a welcoming city, a place where people embrace refugees from all over the world. And that has continued to be the case today, and it will continue to be in the future. You know, Jimmy's I think perspective on that young man we just heard, his presence of mind to be able to say that, I think probably speaks a lot to the experiences that a lot of these people have had in their lives as refugees. You know, they're coming from war-torn places in the world, seeking refuge in our city, and to have them have to revisit something like this in a place that they thought was a safe haven, a refuge, is a real challenge. And, you know, as a community, you know, we're working to make sure that people step forward and recognize that and bring that collective support back to them, to these people, so that they can understand that they're in a safe place.
I'm speaking with Mike Journey with the City of Boise, Chief of Boise Police Bill Bones, and reporter James Dawson about Saturday's stabbing in Boise. If you have questions, please reach out to us. You can email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu, tweet us, KBSX 91.5, or find us on Facebook at Boise State Public Radio. Chief Bones, you said during a news conference on Sunday that these victims are some of the newest members of our community, but they're also some of the youngest.
Yes, both obviously vulnerable from a population. When you're new to a community, new to a culture, new to a country, that really puts you in a very nervous spot, right? And that's anybody. This is a group of people that have experienced terror, and they fled from oppression or danger to come somewhere safe. And I must say, this has been such a welcoming community. I hate that this happened in the city of Boise. I hate that this happened to anybody. But I did see in the faces, in the eyes, as you would talk to people, that they felt a comfort with those that were there to help them, right? That there's been a relationship built, and they had a feeling from being here in Boise that they weren't alone, that there was help there for them, that the people that were coming were people that they could trust. As terrible as the situation it is, and when you're seeing that shock in people's faces, when you're seeing that fear, to see whether it's a police officer, a firefighter, a medical personnel, somebody from the community reach out, and you see that person engage, and you see that thank you, that I need you, and to know that they felt that way here in Boise, that was one of the minor warm spots that I was able to take away from this.
What do we know at this point about the suspect, Chief Bones? Because we do know that he's got an extensive criminal record.
Correct. And I'm a little restricted in going into the specifics of that. But I can tell you this is not a man that woke up a few months or years ago. This is a man with a criminal record going back many, many years through many states, including serious crimes involving weapons and violence. I don't know the past that he's gone through. I don't know the path he trod, but the person he's become is the utter opposite of anything we want to be a part of our community or who we are.
And by definition, this is not a hate crime. It has not been defined as that. Now, when this first came out on Saturday night, there were questions about that. He is an American. He's from Los Angeles. So it is not a hate crime in what how we define that from a legal standpoint.
Correct. So, you know, if we're legally looking to charge somebody with a hate crime, are they targeting a group or a person because of their religious or ethnicity, the background they might have, their race? And we don't have an indication that that was the case. This was really tied to just striking out, it appears, at a location where he had been given some shelter, a location. The person that had given him the shelter wasn't even present. So he wasn't targeting that. It was just whether it's anger or vengeance striking out. And obviously what hurts us the most and what is attacking those that literally had no defense. And, you know, the scenes of a birthday party and the remnants of that are one of the striking images of the scene. Worked very hard, obviously, to clean up the location so that when the residents came back up the next morning, were returning to their shelters, and that they weren't seeing that as mm-hmm. a reminder of the tragedy of the night before.
Because, Chief, during a news conference over the weekend, you had said that he had gotten shelter there, like you just said. Now someone had taken him in, mm-hmm. but then he had been asked to leave on Friday. Correct. He came back.
He did. He returned to the location, and we don't know what was in his mind. Probably we'll never know what was honestly in his mind. But we have had to deal with the aftermath, and those involved will have to deal with it, many of them, for lifetimes.
James, when you were out there on Sunday, and you did talk about almost like that, a blank emotion, but did you see people coming together, though, as well? I mean, I'm sure that was shell shock, right? What else could you sense from the conversations that you had with people there?
Sure. So I did speak with one woman who's a teacher here in Boise who brought a bouquet of flowers. Her general sense was they were up, her and her family were up reading the story, learning the news on Saturday night, came by Sunday morning just to do something. She says that in her classroom, she talks a lot about participating, being an active member of the community, and just not ignoring something. Her big takeaway was even though seemingly she said she's doing something small, her words, it's as though it's showing people that this isn't being forgotten, it's not being ignored, and they realize something is happening. And that was what she had told me, what she expressed when I talked to her.
And Mike, from the city's perspective, what have you heard from you know, community members?
Right. Yeah, we've heard an outpouring of support. We're planning this vigil for this evening at mm-hmm. 6 o'clock on City Hall in the City Hall Plaza. The response to that on social media has been huge. We've heard lots of people on social media thanking the mayor for the statement that he made yesterday after the incident. I had the opportunity to be on site last at the apartment complex on yesterday afternoon as well, and I saw the same thing Jimmy did. People driving up, parking their truck, getting out with a bouquet of flowers, or one guy handing out popsicles to the kids. Mm. And it was so that kind of outpouring is the kind of thing that we recognize as Boise, and so that gives me a lot of heart.
And I would say not surprised by the reaction of
not
people in this city.
No, not at all. And it is who we are. I mean, it's one of the values that we hear constantly that people appreciate about our city, and that is its welcoming nature, the kindness that people have toward one another, the fact that we want to provide that safe haven for these people who have had such tough lives. And so the opportunity to see that really in action is great. So we're looking forward to seeing more people come out tonight.
And when we come back, we will continue this conversation. We'll be bringing in Senator Grant Burgoyne, who represents the district and the people who were affected by this on Saturday night. I'm Gemma Gaudet, and you're listening to Idaho Matters.
The latest hazy days of summer are on their way, but that is no excuse.
This callous act does not reflect our community. In fact, it indeed looks like this individual is not part of our community.
I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters, and that was Boise Mayor Dave Beter talking about an incident that happened Saturday evening here in Boise, a mass stabbing where a man apparently came to an apartment complex during a three-year-old birthday party, ended up stabbing nine people, six of whom are children ranging in age from 3 to 12 years old, and then three adults. Police tell us the suspect is 30-year-old Timothy Kinner. He's from Los Angeles, as I said. He has been charged with numerous felonies. He is set to be arraigned today. This has left our community in shock, I think heartsick, maybe people even angry, as we grapple with how this could happen. Joining me today to continue talking about this is Mike Journey, spokesperson for the City of Boise, Boise Chief of Police Bill Bones, and State Senator Grant Burgoyne from District 16, which is where that attack happened. Thank you again for remaining here and talking about this. Senator Burgoyne, I'd like to start with you. This is your district. This happened where you live. You represent these individuals. How has it been for you this past weekend?
Well, it's a tragedy. These really are collectively all of our children and family members. They've come to Boise to escape troubles in the rest of the world, and they've had this horrible tragedy visited on them. But they live in a good community, and it may be hard for them to appreciate that now. That's completely understandable. But this is a community that stands with them and wants to support them. There is one aspect of this that I've thought quite a bit about, and that is the three-year-old girl in Salt Lake City. She has been taken out of this community and her family taken out of the community, and they're now having to cope with being in another city and all that goes with that. And we and our family have had a little experience with children having to be in the hospital in Salt Lake. And we know that just logistically and financially, that is difficult. And they're going to need our help. Everybody in this attack needs our help. But this family especially is facing some challenges. And I know we'll step up and we will take care of that.
And you've spent time with the refugee community because a lot of them live within your district.
They do. And they're a tremendous part of our community. And it's a community that obviously experiences extraordinary stresses and strains, not only because of problems in their home countries, but just the act of having to pick up and move and come to a new country, a country where the language is different, a country where the culture is different. Even if you move within your own country, you experience a certain sense of dislocation and maybe homesickness. And there are all of these things that go with that. And then to put this on top of it is such a horrible thing.
Chief Bones, you said something during the break that I thought was very profound. And it is about not necessarily about defining a city based on an incident.
So I was talking, and I really do see incidents like 9/11 is a defining moment for our country, but for our community, this is a defining moment. But it's not the incident. It's not the incident. It's not what occurred that defines us. It's how we respond in the aftermath, what we do that shows who we are as a community. And that's the opportunity of today. That's the opportunity of the future. That's the opportunity, Senator Burgoyne is saying, for us to make a difference for those that were involved and send a message across the country. You know, we've got the vigil tonight, and I think we've already had over 1,000 people RSVP online. I'd love to see 10,000 people there for the message that sends of support to the victim of every crime, to the victim of anybody in our community that is victimized for any reason, that we as a community are behind you.
And, Mike, is that one of the reasons for having the vigil is defining us beyond what happened on Saturday night?
It's absolutely right. It's a way to step forward on the right foot and make sure that number one, that these folks feel the support that they need in order to work their way through this, to understand that they are still in a safe community. But also, as a community, for us to help define ourselves going forward from this, we've had this definition of ourselves going forward as a welcoming city. We want that to continue, and this is a great way to step forward and make that happen and make that continue. I think the chief's reaction is exactly right. It's how we move forward from this instance that really is going to define us, and I think the people will feel that love and that support, and we'll be better off for it in the end.
I'm speaking with Boise Chief of Police Bill Bones, Mike Journey, spokesperson for the city of Boise, and State Senator Grant Burgoyne of District 16 about the mass stabbing that happened in Boise Saturday night. If you have questions or comments about how this has affected you, what you're feeling, what you're thinking, you can reach out to us. You can email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu, tweet us, KBSX915, or find us on Facebook at Boise State Public Radio. Chief Bones, you talked a lot this weekend about the first responders, the fact that they got there in less than 4 minutes.
I'm amazingly proud of my police department, the officers, to not only respond, get to the scene, and then locate the suspect. I mean, they had set up a perimeter immediate response to the suspect to take him in custody with very controlled emotions, given the circumstance, and then to rush in and to the first thing they're doing is the first aid and making the pathway for the fire and paramedics. I ran into officers hours later at the hospital that were still covered in blood from the first aid they're given, and their focus is still on the kids. I talked with one of our first responders, and her comment to me was, I was driving by. If I'd have just known a couple minutes early, it wasn't the fact that they'd been able to get there and get the help. It's I wanted to be there faster. And that's everybody that we have as first responders in this valley, whether they're in a role of medical or first aid, fire, police, they did it to help people. And they want to be there before the damage is done. And unfortunately, that's usually not when we're able to reach them. But an amazing job. And I couldn't be prouder as a police chief to be part of this organization, but of the people and how they responded to the incident.
And then when the victims got to the hospital, the medical team.
I got to tell you, they are some of my biggest heroes right now. Walked into the ER, and as you can imagine, it's been 25 years here in Boise. I've been in the ER in some serious incidents before. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that many medical teams. I was talking, and they told me that they actually called 5 trauma teams in on top of the existing trauma teams they had. But they were all on point, on task. And I don't know that everybody will survive this incident. We're still obviously very, very concerned for a couple of the victims. But the hope they've been given and for those that will make it through, if hopefully all, it's due to the medical care that they received. It was simply phenomenal. We are blessed to be in a city like Boise with St. Luke's and St. Al's here and the type of staff and training they have.
And people may not realize the phenomenal trauma teams that we have in this valley.
We have world-class trauma teams here, and they have, as you've talked and probably very aware, they saved Corporal Holtry. They saved his life, and they do that every single week. They do not get the recognition that they should have, but it is one of the jewels of our community. And they not only do they save lives, they care about lives, and you can tell.
And you said some of the injuries will be life-changing.
There are some very, very serious injuries, and obviously I'm not at liberty to disclose those, but they change the way a person functions for the rest of their life.
And Mike, how has the city been responding to the refugee community in light of this? How have they been doing? And we will have someone coming in right after this segment from the international rescue community to be able to talk to people about that. But from a city standpoint.
Well, and that was going to be my answer was, you know, we have some amazing partners in this community who work with refugees. We have the International Rescue Committee, the Idaho Office of Refugees, the Agency for New Americans. They have all immediately stepped forward and are rolling their sleeves up to do everything they can, not only for the families that are involved here, but also the community around them to make sure that these folks have what they need to get by on this. The International Rescue Committee is one of the key sponsors tonight of the vigil, and it was them stepping forward and saying, we want to do this. And the mayor said, absolutely, let's do it at City Hall. So it's a very important, they're a key part of connecting the community to this population and to these folks, and making sure that they integrate and can be the great citizens of our city that they are.
And when we come back, we are going to bring in a representative from the International Rescue Committee of Boise, because we want to talk about how you can help. Because Senator Burgoyne, one thing that you said was, when you're displaced like that, like this family has been to Salt Lake, one of the things that I know has been able to happen is a plane ticket was able to be purchased for the mother of this little girl so she can join her and be down there with her. But there are other things that we as a community can do. So we're going to have a representative come in just a moment to talk more about that and how the community of refugees is doing what we can do to help. So stick around, and we'll be back right after this. I'm Gemma Gaudet. You're listening to Idaho Matters.
I'm James Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News. A suspect in a brutal stabbing at a Boise apartment complex on Saturday night will make his...
Public Radio, 220 East Park Center Boulevard in Boise. More information at treasurevalleyartistsalliance.org.
This is a chance to reaffirm who we are and what we stand for, and those values and those commitments are deep and long-lasting, and we'll go forward.
That was Boise Mayor Dave Beter speaking about the mass stabbing that happened in Boise Saturday night. 9 people stabbed, 6 of them children between the ages of 3 and 12. The suspect, 30-year-old Timothy Kinner of Los Angeles. All the victims are refugees from Syria, Iraq, Ethiopia, people who fled a country of violence for the United States. They came here for a better life, a life of peace. Joining me today to continue our conversation, District 16 State Senator Grant Burgoyne and James Brownson with the International Rescue Committee of Boise. Thank you again for coming in and talking about this.
Thank you.
James, I'd like to start with you. Give us a little bit of background about our refugee community in Boise, because we have a large community.
Yes, we do. Yeah. So the International Rescue Committee, internationally, we work in countries of humanitarian crises to help people recover and gain control of their futures. In the United States, our offices are resettlement agencies. So here in Boise, the International Rescue Committee has been here since 2006. We've resettled about 3,500 refugees in the Boise area, and they are from all different countries. You know, they're from Iran, Iraq, Ethiopia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Bhutan. So they come from a wide range of different countries.
What has it been like this past weekend within the community?
Within the refugee community?
Yes.
It's, you know, I don't know how you can quantify or qualify, you know, something like this.
Right.
It's been, you know, a horrible experience for the people. I know our staff members were at the hospital Saturday night. We were in the office all day yesterday. We're continuing to work with the families today. We want to make sure that they have the support that they need and do everything we can to help them along.
And is there a concern, I mean, because they do come from countries of war. I mean, they are refugees. They are coming to the United States.
Yes.
To seek refuge. And then when something like this happens, does it take them back? I mean, have you seen that?
I can't, because I have not
But people
seen
from
any of
your
clients.
Organization.
The people that are come here as refugees, they've already been traumatized. You know, they've come through war zones. They've been living in refugee camps. So they're already traumatized. And to be re-traumatized by this event, it's mm-hmm. going to be very impactful on the individuals that are affected, as well as the larger refugee community. And, you know, the feelings of safety in the community, they'll, you know, have questions about that. And for the people that have been affected, there's short-term medical needs that need to be addressed, as well as more long-term
just care and help.
Mental health. Yeah.
Senator Burgoyne, you represent a lot of refugees. We talked about that in the last segment. And you've had a chance to be out in that area. What have you seen? What have you heard from people within your district?
Well, I have to say, these are strong and resilient people. Refugees undergo many crises. They undergo many crises in their home countries. They undergo them to get here, and they undergo them here. The international market that burned was a real crisis for people. But their strength and their resilience does see them through, just like it does for all of the immigrants who have come before them, who experienced many trials in becoming successful Americans. And I have every confidence that that will be the case here. Now, we have victims, and we're very concerned about these victims. And we know how difficult and horrific it is. I think the refugee community, it's going to be fine because they are going to succeed. You know, the strength of these refugees is shown in the rest of our community. The churches that open their doors so that these communities can have their religious services, have a place where they can go, and churches of different faiths opening their doors to these new congregations of different faiths, the willingness of our people here to help out. You know, the thing about Idaho that I love is we don't know a stranger. And I think that we have a great reservoir of strength as a community to draw on in these times of trouble. And so I'm confident and I'm optimistic. I look at our schools where immigrant and refugee children attend and what an opportunity that provides for the rest of us. To learn from them, to have our horizons broadened, to take in the rest of the world. People who come to the United States have been through the world and know about the world, and they know that unfortunately it can be a very violent and a very difficult place. And I think they know we're not immune to it. And I think our ability to know and understand that provides us a kind of strength.
I'm speaking with State Senator Grant Burgoyne and James Brownson with the International Rescue Committee of Boise. We are talking about the mass stabbing that happened in Boise Saturday evening. If you have questions, you can always email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. And James, a lot of people have, lots of community members have reached out wanting to help.
Yeah.
What's the most important ways people can help right now?
Yeah, we have it's been an outpouring of support, and it's been incredibly gratifying. Community members, as well as media, a lot of media inquiries. And so the way that the community members can help most, number one, attend the vigil this evening at City Hall at 6 p.m. People can also donate. We've set up a fundraising campaign. If they visit rescue.org, it's right on the main page of rescue.org right now, and people can give directly to the families that have been impacted by this tragedy in Boise to help with medical expenses, to help with rehousing, to help with all the support that will have to come afterwards, the social work and things like that.
Because one of the things that your committee was able to do was with the little girl who had to be transported to Salt Lake, and Senator Burgoyne, you talked about this, and the expense that it costs for a family to do that.
Yeah.
One of the things your committee was able to do, though, was to get the mom to Salt Lake.
Yeah, immediately. We stepped in, got her down there to Salt Lake to be with her daughter. Yeah,
bought her a plane ticket, got her down there.
Yeah.
But Senator Burgoyne, you said within your family you've experienced, you know, having, you know, a child in the hospital, having this kind of displacement in a different city. So from your perspective, I mean, it's not just getting the mom down there. There's other things that need to happen.
Well, when people get to a medical facility that is 5 hours away over the road and an hour or so away by plane, they're taken out of their community. They're taken out of their support system. They need to be with their child to make medical decisions. They need to be with their child to provide that child comfort and support. They need to be with that child for their own emotional needs. And yet they're going to find that they got to Salt Lake City and they didn't have everything that they need. And it's going to just not be a priority to get to the drugstore, to get to the grocery store, to get to wherever, to get those things that they need just so that they can be there with their child. They need a place to stay. That has a cost. It has an expense. What's available in the hospital may or may not be adequate to their to that family's needs. And so there are all of these additional things, and getting there obviously is so extremely important. But now my concern is we have a family, or at least a mom,
we know that,
down there who continue to need our help. And these needs continue. And then they need to come home. And, you know, life is just like this. An event happens, and then it begins to fade from public consciousness. Mm-hmm. And it's going to fall to the neighbors and the families and the friends and their extended community to continue to help to provide the help that's needed. And it's not always financial help. Sometimes it's emotional support. Sometimes it's helping to watch a child so that another child the parent can take to the doctor or can do this or do that. And these things become so important. And, you know, I can say that fortunately we live in a community where these things do happen. And but we need to make sure that everybody's aware mm-hmm. of those needs.
Yeah, a week from now. Or 2 weeks from now.
That's right.
Right. So James, you had mentioned that if people go, it's rescue.org.
Rescue.org. Okay.
And you can donate directly, you said, to these families that are impacted. I know that's incredibly important for people in a situation like this.
Yeah, it's not going to go into a giant black hole. And the you'll actually see on the webpage, there's a link that you can click on to directly support people affected by the tragedy in Boise.
And that's how we can help these families as the days and the weeks go on.
And I would reaffirm what the senator said and keep us in your mind in the future. You know, the outpouring of support has been overwhelming. And it's more than, and there might be some people listening right now that have emailed me asking to help, and I haven't had a chance to respond yet, just because we're working to meet the immediate needs of these families and take care of everything that we need to take care of in the crisis kind of condition like this. But just to keep us in your minds moving forward as well, because tragedies like this unfortunately happen, but we are still a resettlement agency and we're in need of support year-round.
Yeah. I want to thank my guest today, James Brownson, with the International Rescue Committee of Boise, Senator Graham Burgoyne from District 16, as well as Chief of Police, Boise Police Bill Bones, who is here, and Mike Journey with the City of Boise talking about the stabbing that happened last Saturday. Mayor Dave Beter will be joining us tomorrow to talk a little bit more about this, as well as the vigil that is happening tonight, 6 p.m., in Boise at City Hall, if you would like to attend. Up next, we will be talking with a counselor. What do you do in the face of a tragedy? How do you talk to your children? How do you deal with the after effects of this? We're going to have that conversation coming up next. I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters.
Boise State Public Radio is proud to be your public radio station, and we want to keep
it available at stlukesonline.org.
I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. This entire hour, we have been talking about the mass stabbing that happened in Boise Saturday evening, speaking with our city leaders, our chief of police, our International Rescue Committee, as well as the senator from that district. Right now, we want to talk about the after effects of what happens when we see a tragedy like this, the grief, the bereavement, the trauma. We have brought in a grief counselor, Jenny Emerzy, with St. Luke's, to get us talking about what we do with this. And Jenny, thank you for coming in. I appreciate
that. Thank you for having me.
When something like this happens and it affects a community at large, I think we're all in a bit of shock.
Yeah.
How do we deal with these emotions? I know that's a big question.
It's a big question, yeah. Like, do we have another hour?
Yeah, exactly. we might need to.
I mean, it's a new experience for me, too, living in beautiful Boise. This is something I think we've had tragedies in the past and things that we've faced, but this is one on a level that I think we're all kind of wondering, what do we do? I'm a parent, too, and mm-hmm. so I have those questions of, you know, how do I talk to my kiddos about this? I think you're seeing really beautiful things happen. I can't remember if it was Chief Bones that maybe said this, you know, just how this is a terrible thing that's happened, but the way the community's banding together and, you know, putting the vigil together and donating and asking how they can help. I watched video of families, you know, kiddos in their swimsuits running across the street on this mm-hmm. little news video, putting flowers down. And so I think those are some of the really beautiful ways that we reach out when we don't know what else to do, when we feel this loss of control. But there's also just the emotion that goes along with it when you're just sitting in your living room and hearing stories over and over. I think that recognizing that we need a little downtime to take care of ourselves, you know, some isolation isn't mm-hmm. a bad thing. To just sit and really process, how do I feel about this and what can I do that's meaningful to me? It's different for everybody. Recognizing that not all emotions are bad. We think of uncomfortable emotions like anger or sadness, which tend to be the first things that rise up. Even in me, you know, it's an uncomfortable emotion for me to feel angry, but that was a knee-jerk reaction. How could this happen in our community, mm-hmm. which is grief all on its own? You know, that's a grief reaction to say it's a loss that we thought, this perceived sense that our community is safe, and here we've had something terrible that just shouldn't have happened here, and it did. So I think taking those emotions and just stopping and recognizing I'm having those and I don't have to push them down, mm-hmm. but to be mindful of how I'm going to then spring into action and use them for good instead of, you know, ranting on social media or, you know, that's again, just a knee-jerk reaction yeah. to feel mad and want to do something that maybe wouldn't be consistent with your values.
And we're talking about our children. So you're a parent, I'm a parent. I was very thankful when this happened that it's summer break. And the reason being is that, you know, my children didn't go to school and have all these kids talking about it. Mm-hmm. With that being said, we haven't really known how to talk about it. And I think a lot of parents are in that boat right now.
Yeah.
With something like this, how do you talk to your kids? And should we, depending upon their age?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all know our kids best and our family systems are all set up differently. Mm-hmm. But our kids can handle a lot more than I think we give them credit for. And we're living in a world where things like this are happening. And when they go back to school, they're going to hear about it, or they're going to hear about other, you know, hard stories and tough stories. And so sometimes it's just recognizing where your kiddo is at developmentally. You know, somebody who's maybe 3 or 4, which a lot of the kiddos that were impacted by mm-hmm. this were this really young age, you know, you might ask them what their understanding is, if they have questions. I always feel like it's smart to, even a teenager, it's always smart to put it back on the kid. You know, what do you know about this and what questions do you have? Or, hey, I'm going to go to this rally and there's going to be some of our leaders there for our community. Do you have questions you want me to ask them? Sometimes putting it on a third party, they might not ask their parents, but they'll say, oh, will you ask them this and this? And it can be really insightful to where they're at. And then just answering in small sound bites. And I feel like going back to them, too, and saying, does that make sense to you? You know, clarifying again, can they restate back what they understand?
Because they won't. Because my concern always is like, well, I scare them.
Yeah.
And like you said, they can handle more than we may think.
Yeah. And it's a natural reaction for us as parents to want to protect them. We don't want them to know that the world is scary. We don't want to. It hurts us to see them hurting and scared. And so mm-hmm. how do we wrap them up in this bubble and protect them for as long as we can? That's kind of our job as a parent. And I always kind of go back to really tough conversations help them grow. And they help us grow as parents, too, because they're hard and uncomfortable for us. And our kiddos tend to surprise us. And we learn a lot about them that we might not ever know otherwise. But that's how kids process, and that's how they learn about the world. And then we've armed them with information for when they're 20 or 30.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Jenny Emmerzy. She is a counselor at St. Luke's dealing with grief. And Jenny, when we do speak about grief, there will be a grieving process. I mean, right now it's so fresh that, as you said, a lot of people may be feeling angry or, well, what can I do? Mm-hmm. But it's, do you think there will be a grieving process, not just for the people that experienced what happened or the people that witnessed it, but as a community?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we move, you know, through that?
I mean, I think the gentlemen who were on today, they all had great ideas already. Mm-hmm. I heard a lot, you know, I'd sit out there and I, you know, kind of thought to myself, well, that's grief that they're talking about, and kind of ticked some things away. But as a community, I think it's watching for the vigil tonight. That's a really, you know, powerful way in the moment and as kind of an immediate reaction. But to even just stop and think, you know, 3 weeks down the road, a month down the road, how am I feeling about this? It may not be in the news as much, but you might still have that, you know, kiddo in Salt Lake on your heart, or mm-hmm. how...
you may drive by it.
Right. Yeah. People who drive down State Street, and that's that constant reminder. And so to recognize that that's going to be there, and reaching out to people that you trust, that you care about, reaching out to like the IRC, the gentleman was here from the IRC. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else I can do? How are those families doing? And just recognizing it's an ongoing process. It's not something that is going to be over after the vigil tonight.
And should people be, you know, surprised or shocked if they are feeling these emotions, you know, a couple of weeks, a month down the road? Because I think a lot of times we think, well, I wasn't affected by this. I mean, it mm-hmm. happened here, but I wasn't there. I don't know anyone there. But can there be, you know, residual effects of trauma?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that people are going to notice that whether they're conscious of it or not, because we kind of get wrapped up in this. Our bodies do this amazing thing. I call it a grief blanket, where your mind just kind of goes into that numbness and shock phase. And, you know, I think that's how that sweet 12-year-old was able to tell his story, mm-hmm. which was an important part of his processing too. But there's that numbness and shock that makes us able to function and to get through. And then a few weeks later, that starts to kind of lift. And if you're not aware of it and paying attention that that may be coming, you're not going to notice that that's a grief reaction that you're still having.
I want to thank you, Jenny, for coming in today. Jenny Emmerzy is a counselor, a grief and bereavement counselor at St. Luke's. We will have you on another day to talk more about grief and bereavement. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
And I appreciate all of my guests for coming in today. It has been a busy weekend for all of them. And thank you for listening. My producers are Samantha Wright and Rich Copeland. And we do want to have a programming note. We did promise you that we would have William Shatner on today. We will be bringing you that interview at another date. It was just important to be having this conversation on this day. You are listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you back here tomorrow.